In this week's Guardian Review, poet laureate Carolan Duffy has curated a series of poems on ageing from poetry's elder statesmen. A selection of these poets, from Danny Absey to Anthony Thwaite, came into the Guardian studios this week to record their contributions. First to read was Linda Chase with her poem, Old Flame.
He turns my hand in his hand as if to catch the light, separating my fingers to see my rings one by one. Questions and answers follow. Country, stones, when, from whom? And then my other hand. Because this ritual has been going on for 50 years, and there are no surprises, as he counts the parts of me and the decorations I choose. But today, I wear a bracelet he has never seen before, knowing that it's to his taste, that it will spark new attention beyond his routine inspection. Between the larger stones sit dashes of orange abalone, keeping spaces in between irregular chunks of turquoise. He fingers them around my wrist, and I'm a girl again, fluttering through her jewelry and her life.
My name is Elaine Feinstein, and my poem is called Long Life. Late summer. Sunshine, the eucalyptus tree. It is a fortune beyond any deserving to be still here, with no more than everyday worries, placidly arranging lines of poetry. I consider a stick of cinnamon bound in raffia, finches in the grass, and a stubby bush which this year mothered a lemon. These days I speak less of death than this miracle of survival. I'm no longer lonely, not yet frail, and after surgery, recognize each breath as a favor. My generation may not be nimble, but forgive us, we'd like to hold on. Stubbornly content, even while aging.
My name is Danny Absey. I've written a poem called The Old Gods because Carolan Duffy kindly asked me to write about aging. The Old Gods. The gods, old as night, don't trouble us. Poor weeping Venus. Her pubic hairs are grey, and her magic love girdle has lost its spring. Neptune wonders where he put his trident. Mars is gaga, illusory vultures on the wing. Pluto exhumed blinks. My kind of world, he thinks, kidnapping and rape like my front page exploits adroitly brutal. But he looks out of sorts when other unmanned gods shake their heads, tut tut, respond boastingly, boringly anecdotal. Diana has done a bunk, fearing astronauts. Saturn, time on his hands, stares at nothing, and nothing stares back. Glumbacchus talks ad nauseam of cirrhosis, and small, bald Cupid, fiddling with arrows, can't recall which side the heart is. All the old gods have become enfeebled, mere playthings for poets. Few doze or daft frolic on Parnassian clover. True, sometimes summer light dies in a room, but only a bearded profile in a cloud floats over.
I'm Fleur Adcock, and my poem's called Mrs. Baldwin. And then there's the one about the old woman who very apologetically asks the way to Church Lane, adding, I ought to know. I've lived there since the war. So you go with her. This comes with variations, usually leading via a list of demented ancestors to calculations of how much time you've got before you're asking the way to your own house. But it's not so often that you find the one about how, whenever you hear of someone diagnosed with cancer, you have to hide that muffled pang that clutched you at 15 when you saw Pauline Edwards holding hands with the boy from the social club you'd always fancied.
My name is Maureen Duffy, and the poem is called That Time of Year Thou Mayst in Me Behold. Poets don't grow old gracefully, recall old lusts with Hardy, or clamour like Yeats for new. How are you, people ask them, meaning, goodness, you're still alive. Are you still writing? Signals. If so, you're quite forgotten. I haven't seen any reviews. And aren't you going gently yet into your good night? Gower, his loins frozen by Venus, piped of a king and his bounty of wine. Did he who'd sung of every turn and twist of love regret the arrow's sting he'd begged love's priest to tear from his heart as he lay apart from his chaste wife? Merlin the Margus, besotted in old age, entombed in the rock by Nimue for his lust, must have been a poet too. How else could he have cast such spells? When David was old, they brought him a virgin, hoping for a new Song of Solomon. Help us all then, Lady, Sappho's own goddess, to sing your song until the last bittersweet note.
I'm Anthony Thwaite, and this poem is called Silence. This silence, with you away, these silences, day after day, silence itself, pure and cold and grey. Once I welcomed it, heard nothing but peace, even a bird disturbing it. Without a word, silence welcomed me, took me in friendliness, shook melancholy out, thrust a book into my hands, so that I read hungrily of what lay ahead, not thinking of the dead. Alone, silence lies along the bone, grey, cold as a stone.
I'm Ruth Vainlight, and this poem is called Ageing. Since early middle age, say around 40, I've been writing about ageing. Poems in many registers, fearful, enraged, or accepting as I moved through the decades. Now that I'm really old, there seems little left to say. Pointless to bewail the decline, bodily and mental, undignified, boring, not to me only, but everyone. And ridiculous to celebrate the wisdom supposedly gained simply by staying alive. Nevertheless, to have faith that you'll be adored as an ancient might make it all worthwhile. Aging means smiling at babies in their pushchairs and strollers, wondering if I look as crazy as Virginia or Algernon, though I don't plan to buy it. Realizing I'm smiling at strangers. It means no more roller skating. That used to be my favourite sport, after school, every day. To strap on my skates, spin one full circle in place, then swoop down the hill and away. When I saw that young girl on her blades, wind in her hair, sun on her face, like a magazine illustration from childhood days, racing her boyfriend along the pavement, Then I understood ageing.
Alan Brown, John. 31st of December, 2009. I stepped down in dying light from the table on which I stood on this last day of a decade, screwing in a low-energy bulb, a token of somebody's scheme for empowering me to be good and to play my part in small ways. But the online newscasts reveal hour by hour how the larger thieves go on playing a different game to pollute and cloud over our days. The naught years have gone to their end, like supplements gladly thrown in with spent bottles and cartons and cans to a green good citizen's bin. The media historians will recount to us how we all lived, the garments celebrity wore, the musics we should have preferred, and which reputation survived an acclaim they did not deserve. But we already know the score. When the bulb has brightened, I read in hard copy broadsheets of wars that extended and raged unresolved, of treaties saluting the need for the brokers of power to stay rich. Through these last 10 years, famine gripped regions out of humanity's reach. The measures we could have applied to plant hope in a field of defeats went ignored, where the drowned-out song of long marches down monitored streets. However you try, it's a task to retrieve fast-vanishing fact from among coloured spreads which maintain, all you want is our visual world. We allow you to see but not learn and not think and above all not act. In ingenious graphics, a dance of computerized death fills the screens where the language of management rules, cloaked in mantras which conceal the crimes of its ignorance. Though my writing's a hapless scrawl compared with 4 decades ago, it might serve to cite one surprise from the final hours of this year. On a train stopped by seasonal snow, on a Circle Line platform, all eyes leaving tabloid headlines to fall on the middle of nowhere, most hands clutching cell phones, this occurred. Something moved in front of our feet where we sat in dull silence. A bird. Through doors open wide to the air, where we'd halted at Edgware Road, perhaps to find out where we were, the creature hopped in and patrolled past our bags as it foraged for crumbs. Then the voice called, "Doors closing, the train is about to depart." All it had was its grey urban wings to fly out at around waist level and scare waiting customers, landing again near a flickering platform ad. It was not out to symbolise the shortness of all our lives with this 3 minutes exercise. It just took the liberty of renouncing our heedless faces, getting out while the going was good, not desiring to stay on and be conveyed to too many more places where you clicked on democracy to find freedom was a strict law and choice was compulsory. Knowing what it was all about, it appeared to forsake the entire shebang of our 21st century of terror and doubt, and its call was important to us. There were wisdoms we might acquire from its take on our decades' events. Where such powerful evils desire to target us for their own aims, could we not ourselves form a flock, migrating to common sense? Are the limits of reason reached, where affirmation may only be said to exist in football chants, in New Year's sieges of stores, in flagged parades of the dead? Has each truly affirmative cause become a mere shrug of despair? I am sorry to fear, now it's dark, that only the worst lies ahead, though the least we could show from now on is an odd affirmative spark.